The next case this morning, number 2010-1754, Columbus City School District Board of Education versus Testa Tax Commissioner. Ms. Gorey.
Thank you very much. Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Kelly Gorey, representing the Columbus City School District. Today we're appealing a decision of the tax commissioner exempting property owned by Ohio State University. The school district contends that the tax commissioner and the BTA's decisions were unlawful for three primary reasons. One is that both incorrectly interpreted Revised Code 334517, and the one and only permissible interpretation of the statute would not allow exemption here. Second, the BTA also erred in holding that the determinative factor in both the Don Scott case and the University of Cincinnati case was that the rental proceeds were used and deposited in the university's general fund. Third, we also contend that the BTA's decision lacks the certain factual findings of supportive use that were found in Don Scott and Cincinnati. First, the Revised Code 334517 exempts property held for the use and benefit of the of a state university so long as the property itself is used for the support of the university. Although we do a much more thorough discussion in our briefs, I just want to spend 1 second. The statute at issue here is definitely most similar to 334917, which is the state university statute. I'm sorry, the municipal university statute. And there, I'm sure, as the court has noted, the language regarding rents, issues, profits, and income was intentionally deleted by the legislature here in 1963 and is not included in the statute. But obviously, that is extremely important here because we believe that the BTA has actually read back into our statute this language. Second, what the BTA actually did is it applied a hybrid of incorrect interpretations of the statute. First, it read back in the rents, issues, and profits language that is not found in 334517. And second, it also ignored the operative language of the statute, which is found twice in the statute, that the property itself must actually be used for the support of Ohio State University.
Now, the state's argues in its brief that the amendment of the statute at issue actually removed a restriction. I guess the state views that views the municipal university one as being more restrictive. How do you respond to that argument?
I respectfully disagree. I think that's exactly what is at issue here. What is happening is that the Ohio State University is leasing property to a credit union and four residents. If it were a municipal university, we can look solely at what the use of the rents and proceeds. I think, in fact, it's the exact opposite. Omitting that language from the statute makes the statute, in fact, much, much, much more restrictive, such that an impermissible interpretation of the statute would be to base exemption under the statute solely upon the use of the rents and proceeds. And I think that's what the BTA has done here. And they have also, I'm sure as you noted in the last line of the decision, they held that the university's purchasing of the $500 leasehold wasn't actually, doesn't have anything to do with the original bequest, resulted in ownership that was supportive of the university. So they've said its rents and proceeds are being used for a scholarship, which at this point actually isn't true. And then second, that forget about the rents and proceeds, the ownership alone supports the university. And they're missing the use part.
Well, now, but in the cases, clearly the cases that you refer to, the Don Scott Field case and the University of Cincinnati case, there was income from the property in both of those cases.
There was. The main distinguishing factor in both of those cases is that the Supreme Court actually found evidence, factual findings of supportive use. And they found that in Don Scott, in that it was a control zone for the airport, and also that the larger part of the property, we can say the 1.9 acres, we can say the 78 acres, were actually used in support of the academic mission of the Department of Aviation and the College of Agriculture. And then in Cincinnati, it was only 12% of this larger building, of which the other 88% was occupied by the College of Architecture and actually used by the college clearly in support of the university. What we have here is that the BTA didn't make any factual findings regarding use at all. And it's pretty obvious why they didn't do that. And that's because no one would contend that the actual use of the property for a credit union and for non-student housing supports Ohio State University. What it's focusing on is the terms of the bequest and that the property might eventually be used to generate proceeds for a scholarship. But when properly interpreting the statute, we have to look at the actual use. We can't look solely to the rents and proceeds. I'm sorry, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal as well. The main issue here is, it's easy, is the property being used in support of Ohio State University? And we don't disagree with the definition of support set forth in Cincinnati, but you have to look to something other than the rents and proceeds to find the supportive use. And the BTA's decision is entirely devoid of any of the other findings that were present in Don Scott and Cincinnati.
There's also a constitutional argument that's advanced in your brief.
I'm sorry, I think it was clarified in our reply brief.
Okay.
I agree that it was slightly unclear in the original brief.
Okay.
What we're attempting to argue is that if reading back in this language about the rents and proceeds, it results in an unconstitutional application of the statute in that the credit union and McDonald's, who are obviously non-exempt tenants, are being treated preferentially in terms of real property taxes. And both of them under their leases are required to pay the taxes. It's our position is that the issue is clear and it's solely an issue of statutory interpretation. Can this court find that the property itself is actually being used for the support of the Ohio State University? And we would say here that it's not. And one final point about the terms of the bequest. I think both the university and the tax commissioner would somehow lump those together, that because the Ohio State University might eventually be honoring the terms of the bequest, that that somehow supports exemption. But as we all know, the test for exemption is the statute itself. And in fact, the terms of the bequest are entirely irrelevant. Yes, it is prescribing an eventual use or where the proceeds must go. If it even is binding on Ohio State, that's another issue. But the terms of the bequest and the statutory exemption are two separate and distinct issues that are not related. So the only thing we're looking at here is the property used for the support of the Ohio State University.
So under that submission, though, it could change in the future, or maybe it's already the present, but initially the university paid $500,000 to get the leasehold and the title to the property together. And my understanding is that this income is being used to pay that off, in essence.
Correct.
And then it will be applied to the purposes of the bequest. So once it's applied to the purposes of the bequest, it might suddenly spring into an exempt status, or it still wouldn't under your reading of the statute.
I actually don't believe that it would, because the only thing we would be looking at is the use of the rents and proceeds. Now, let's say the College of Veterinary Medicine would occupy a portion of the space, say they were in Cincinnati. Okay, that would be the actual use factor that we would need, coupled with the use of the proceeds. But I don't believe a correct interpretation of the statute allows this court to consider solely the rents, issues, profits, and proceeds. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gorey. Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Master Kissmer, Commissioner Mayor. May it please the court. We keep talking about the support of the property, how it supports the university, and I think one thing that the Board of Education is overlooking and is kind of the key point here is how the property is being used. Yes, that is an issue that the school district keeps bringing up, but obviously all the funds that come through as far as the income from the property is turned directly over to the university, which is then being paid off on a line of credit and being used. The scholarship has been set up and being used for that purpose. The one thing that opposing counsel has mentioned is in the other cases, Don Scott and University of Cincinnati, is that the Supreme Court had looked to other things as well as the income to say that it was exempt under 334517. One of those things in those cases was the proximity of the control zone to the airport. I think we can argue in this case, and it's in the record already, that this is part of the South Gateway right on main campus, right in the main artery on Neal Avenue. Obviously, it's in a proximity of the university itself. One of the other things is a portion of the income, 12%, I think, in the Don Scott case was being derived part of income. And in this case, you know, obviously it's a larger portion. However, the Supreme Court in the Don Scott case found that there was still room for expansion. That was one of the other uses, that there was expansion for the purposes of the university. And I would argue that in the same case, according to as required by the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding that's part of the record, is not only is the university required to provide a right of first, basically, option if any tenant leaves the subject property, the university has to provide the College of Veterinary Medicine the first right to occupy that space or lease it. In addition, there is language in there that talks in the Memorandum of Understanding that the university also, if they decide to sell it, has to try to get the most proceeds available and turn it over directly to the College of Veterinarian. And there also is reference in the Memorandum of possible use of the property by the College of Veterinary Medicine. So there is an expansion element there.
Now, you're pointing to factors about the location of this mm-hmm. property and the bequest and the use of money and proceeds for mm-hmm. these scholarships. Mm-hmm. Is that necessary for the grant of an exemption, or is it enough that the income in some way, in what way, doesn't matter, goes to help the university, which appears to be the state's position?
Right. I don't think it's necessary. I'm solely bringing up those arguments in response to opposing counsel, but our view of the statute is that, and again, it's a statutory construction argument. This argument's been before you guys several times before the honorable court, and the fact that the proceeds, the income derived from the property, are used to truly support the university, I think that's sufficient. The statute does not contain that language for a reason, in our opinion, and it's opposed to what opposing counsel stated, that she believes that the statute restricts it further. I think it broadens. I think it's more, I don't think it's an exclusive statute. There's nothing in there that requires a percentage or majority or minority of the property producing income that supports the university. So in that aspect, I truly think that.
So under Ohio State's submission and the state's view, the university could purchase rental properties elsewhere in the city of Columbus, run, hire Buckeye Realty to manage them. And as long as the income is in some way used by the university, that property can be exempt?
Well, it's a little bit of a tricky argument. Obviously, the further and further away we get from campus, then I think that becomes a little bit of an issue. I think the main point is that the income being derived from the property supports the university. Then we get into these other little minor points below that, whether or not it's proximity-wise, based on this honorable court's prior decisions and those other cases, they do talk about proximity, and they do talk about other uses of the property.
I think what the school board is saying, though, is that in those cases, it could be construed that the use of the property, at least in part, that the actual use mm-hmm. was an activity that was in some way operationally related mm-hmm. to the university, mm-hmm. as opposed to simply having the income be used by the university.
Right, and I understand that. It's our position that the statute is it's exclusive. It doesn't basically state that it can't be income. I mean, the actual description and definition of the word support that this honorable court has given is to actively promote the interest or cause of, which obviously any sort of scholarship fund is going to be actively promoting the cause and use of the education of the university, two, to give assistance to, and three, to pay the cost of and maintain. Obviously, any income that's coming in is paying the cost to maintain that building and then, therefore, then fund the scholarship.
So the case really boils down to whether or not the use of property for the support of the university
yes.
encompasses a use of the income.
Correct. As the support. Mm-hmm. And we obviously would argue that it does. The income from the property isn't being used in any other manner. It's solely being used to support the university, outside of paying the operating cost to maintain the property, which is provided in the description and definition of support. That is our argument, that obviously the use of the income is only being used in an educational manner to support the university, and by definition that the Supreme Court has given of the use of the word support, that is one of those pieces to the definition.
Now it is striking, the legislative background to this, given that we have the municipal university statute mm-hmm. dating back to about 1911. Mm-hmm. Then we have a statutory language originally proposed in 1963 for the state universities that looks exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And then during the legislative process, it's changed. Mm-hmm. And as it comes out, there's actually no reference to income and profits. It's use for the support of.
Yeah, one thing I do note is, well, first of all, we're not here obviously discussing the municipal statute or any of the other statutes.
Sure.
We're looking at the statute and relevancy. But in addition, opposing counsel, the school district has talked about and got into a long discussion over the, you know, the legislative history of it and the General Assembly's limitations or non-limitations. And one of the things that they failed to point out was that there were several, I think two or three rules that came out, statutes that came out in between this determining that the old rule, the 150-year rule, was possibly unconstitutional or needed to be changed. You know, the Denison case that came out in 1965, in between that, three statutes were enacted that would have been in contradiction to the rule, and the General Assembly never held that they were unconstitutional. So it is a little bit of a mucky mess in the legislative history if you look at it through the time in comparison to the statutes. We will concede that point, that it is to be somewhat of a mess. As far as interpreting exactly what it
is. So the point that you're making is that the General Assembly had some other reason for changing the language
that doesn't
lead to the inference that they did not intend the result that the BTA arrived at.
No, I think my point was just that there have been other statutes in place that the General Assembly didn't necessarily state that these are unconstitutional because they violate this 150-year rule that came out before Denison, the case of Denison came out and ruled otherwise. So I don't think that the intent of the General Assembly by changing the language of this was to take out any income portion of the statute. Again, I think it's an exclusive statute. It doesn't piecemeal, doesn't state that a percentage of the property can be used for X or that it has to be used for any specific purpose. That's the other one thing the school district has been pointing into, is the purpose of the property and trying to tie into. And the other point is if we take out this aspect of the funds being generated and used to support the university, what purpose does the statute hold, really? Because any other use of the property, whether it be educational-based, whether it be used for academic purposes, whatever it may be, all of those would fall under another statute that's already in existence. So that if we take out this income support issue of this particular statute, what's the point of the statute? Every other type of property that a university would own or being owned by the state of Ohio for the use and benefit of the university would already fall under an existing statute already in place. So, do you have any other questions? I think I'll just stop right there then before I carry off on another tangent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hager. Ms. Gorey, you have 3 minutes and 55 seconds.
Thank you. The university makes first a comment about proximity. And while I don't disagree that this is in, obviously, on campus and in between university buildings, the difference there is that, well, first in Don Scott, Ohio State actually acquired a large piece of property for a purpose, for academic purposes. Here, Ohio State didn't get this by acquiring it. It came to it by reason of chance, and then it elected to purchase the leasehold, which the bequest never even contemplated. And then also she noted that it could be used for expansion of the College of Veterinary Medicine. And I don't disagree that the memorandum of understanding actually says that, but I think it's important to note that when McDonald's vacated, the MOU was in place. And in fact, the College of Veterinary Medicine could have occupied the 10,000 square feet commercial space, but they didn't. They had the right of first refusal to do that. And had they occupied it, and so say we have the commercial space being used actually by the College of Veterinary Medicine and the proceeds going to eventually fund a scholarship, the case is very different. But that's not what happened. So I think the fact that it could potentially at some point be used for an expansion, I think that has a lot less weight than it did in both Cincinnati and Don Scott. Well, because in fact, the larger property was being used as expansion facilities.
Right, because in University of Cincinnati, there was a prospective use
correct
aspect to that case.
There was a prospective use aspect of that case, but what was happening is that the majority of this of the actual building was already being used then currently by the college. And one final one final point here, I think it's less important why the language was omitted from the statute, but the language, the rents and profits and issues language was omitted from the statutes. If we were here today dealing with the municipal, the municipal exemption statute, the university and the tax commissioner would have a much, much, much better case. That would be a plain language reading of the statute. And then finally, I think also a point is to be made that there was no profit being made by the university in both Don Scott and Cincinnati. We submitted in our brief that the university has profited in the amount of about $351,000 over the period applicable here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gorey. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.